Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. More than 2.5 million U.S. service members were deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan since 2001. That led to a sharp increase in the number of veterans living with disabilities, and many of these wounded warriors are depending on their family members to give them the care that they need. These are military caregivers, but are they getting the help that they need, or training, or backup? We want to hear from you. Are you a military caregiver, or is there a military caregiver in your life who is a hidden hero deserving of recognition and some extra help? We invite you to join in our conversation by giving us a call. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email us your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org and go to the comments section on our website at tpr.org. We're joined by Rajiv Ramchand. He is the author of a report about hidden heroes for the RAND Corporation, and he is also a senior behavioral and social scientist. Welcome to The Source.
Hi, it's good to be here.
So it's incredible the number of people who are dealing with this issue, not somebody who they're out in front. They are, like you said, they're hidden. They're hidden heroes. How big is this?
Yeah, we did a national survey, and for the first time, we were really able to reliably estimate the number of caregivers in the United States. So these are people who are providing unpaid care and assistance to somebody who's wounded, ill, or injured. We find 22.6 million Americans are caregivers to another adult. That's 9% of adults in the United States. Of that 22.6, 5.5 million are military caregivers. That means they're caring for somebody who's a veteran or a current service member. And finally, of that 5.5 million, 20% or 1.1 million are caring for somebody who served post 9/11, so in the Iraq and Afghanistan era.
And are these like their spouses, or are they, how are they connected to the people that they're taking care of?
It's a great question. So the post 9/11 caregivers look really different than the other caregivers. So in that post 9/11 group, we have 33% who are spouses. We have 25% who are parents taking care of a wounded, ill, or injured son or daughter. And finally, we have 25% that are friends or neighbors, buddies of the person that they're caring for. This is really different than other military caregivers, you know, from pre-9/11 or from civilian caregivers. That group tends to be middle-aged adults who are caring for their aging parents or spouses who are caring for another aging spouse.
We want to hear stories from our community about hidden heroes, people who are taking care of wounded warriors back from serving in Afghanistan and Iraq, and what are the challenges that you face? What sort of community conversation do we need to have to make sure that people don't suffer burnout or, compassion fatigue? How do we make sure that this is a sustainable situation? We want you to call in. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. So, Rajiv, is that a problem, burnout, compassion fatigue?
Yeah, it's a real problem, significantly for the post 9/11 caregivers. So we looked at an actual symptom criteria for depression, and we found 40% of post 9/11 caregivers met symptom criteria for depression. That's double other caregivers. So we see in caregivers generally 20% meet criteria for depression, and only 10% of non-caregivers meet criteria, which is consistent with the general population. So in other words, we have four times as many caregivers meeting depression criteria than non-caregivers.
And depression could mean things like lack of sleep, self-medicating through a use of alcohol, other things like that. That's not being able to face challenges, to day-to-day executive function type challenges.
Yeah, this is real. You know, we used a standardized scale. So these are people that would probably receive a diagnosis of depression if they went and talked to a psychiatrist or a psychologist.
And when you talk about the spouses, and of course we take a vow, but sometimes that bond sort of gets worn down after a while. What's the chance of those bonds breaking down and the marriages dissolving, and what happens when that happens?
Dave, that's a really great question. We actually highlight that in the report, that we really need to think as a society about the future of caregiving. As I said before, a third of these post 9/11 caregivers are spouses. They're young. In our survey, they report their relationship quality as poor. And so we worry that these marriages will dissolve or end in divorce over time. You know, we're worried about the quarter of caregivers who are parents caring for a son and daughter. In 15 years, we estimate that many, if not all, will be unable to perform these caregiving duties. So what type of substitutive care is available for our veterans in 10 years when parents and spouses may no longer be there to help care for them?
So if there's like a lot of physical demands in taking care of someone, then eventually as the caregiver, if they're the parents, they may not be able to do all that heavy lifting.
That's right. These tasks are diverse. Around half of caregivers help the person that they're caring for with an activity of daily living. These are things like bathing, eating, dressing, things that you need to live. So they can be physically demanding. For somebody who has severe chronic back pain or an amputee, taking them into and out of bed, helping them into and out of chairs, getting them into and out of a bathtub, these are physically demanding tasks.
You know, but someone might be wondering, why aren't they just in a VA hospital or something like that? But, I mean, I think it's better to keep people with their families and having in-home health care. It preserves the family, and there's all sorts of extra benefits. But are there resources that can be diverted from the VA to help these families?
Well, you know, we talk a lot about easing the burden on caregivers. I think that what you talk about, sometimes institutionalization is necessary. But, you know, as a society, we save a lot of money relying on caregivers to help support and to keep our veterans out of institutions. And people may often prefer that they not be living in one of these institutional facilities. But that's why it's so important that we support these caregivers. And so we talk about areas for support, such as making sure that they have access to health insurance, the caregivers I'm talking about. We find that a third of our caregivers don't have access to health insurance. We also talk about respite care. Respite care provides a break for caregivers so that they can it's a temporary break. It may be a day, it may be a week, but it provides a break from caregiving duties. And we think this is really important because the time that these caregivers spend providing care is the number one predictor of depression among this group.
Like just being out to go out and see a movie or something.
I mean, it could be as little as going out and running chores for a day or going to the gym, seeing a movie, whatever that, you know, they need to kind of just take a break. Or, you know, for some cases, institutions will provide respite over a period of days so that the individual can have a staycation, you know, or can go somewhere. But we really have to think about expanding respite services, but also thinking about new strategies. One thing I haven't mentioned yet is these post 9/11 caregivers, 64% of the people they're caring for have a behavioral health condition like post-traumatic stress disorder or depression. So these are the veterans themselves. So we need to think about alternative respite arrangements that can accommodate the needs of this group.
Well, what about the training for these military caregivers? Do they know what they're doing? I mean, of course, they're doing the best they can. But if you don't know the proper way, or maybe there's a better way of doing these tasks.
You know, that's a great question. We identified as part of our study all of the services that currently exist to support these caregivers. We found 37 organizations that offer training. The problem with the training programs is that very few have been evaluated. So we don't know if they work, if they make people better caregivers, if they help people, you know, caregivers' well-being, if they help the veterans' well-being. So we really call for an increased focus on evaluating these current programs. The other thing we noticed is that these programs for caregivers are generally focused on caring for someone who's elderly, so somebody who has cancer or somebody who has dementia. And as I just said, the conditions that our post 9/11 veterans are dealing with are quite different than these conditions associated with aging.
Our phone lines are open. If you want to tell a story about your life, if there's a secret, a hidden hero in your life, someone who's caring for one of our wounded warriors, give us a call. The number is 614 614- 8980. Or if this describes you, we want to hear from you. The number is 614-8980. We would love to be able to learn more about what's happening and what kind of services would help you. So it seems like when you have this situation, is it that most of the care responsibilities falls upon one individual, or is it shared among multiple people in the family?
Dave, you're asking some really, really great questions and things that we wanted to know as well in our study. So when we look at this, we actually find that 53% of our post-9/11 caregivers, so over half, don't have anyone else that they can call on to help them with these caregiving duties. So their caregiver is doing it alone. Many more of the pre-9/11 caregivers, military caregivers, as well as civilian caregivers, many more of them have this type of support. So many of them are doing this essentially on their own.
And that's because of they're the only person available, or is it just that there just needs to be some better family politics involved?
You know, that is something we don't know. We didn't really get into that in our survey, but you know, we don't know why there's so few of them that have someone else they can report.
Maybe, I mean, if we can raise the awareness, I mean, maybe there is someone in your family taking care of someone else and you don't know that they might be needing your help, or maybe they're sending you mixed messages, but
I think that's critical. I think, you know, that's another one of our recommendations, and why, you know, you're taking on this issue is so important, because we really need to raise the awareness of the value that these people provide. We estimate in our study that post 9/11 caregivers themselves save the country at least $3 billion a year. This is cost we would otherwise spend institutionalizing individuals or providing home health care. All military caregivers save the country $15 billion per year. So we're talking about real savings and real value that these caregivers are actually providing.
So how do we get some of those savings and turn those into resources to help these people out?
Well, that's a great question. Something pretty interesting happened today, which is Senator Patty Murray introduced a bill to Congress in the Senate to support military caregivers, to expand services and expand respite and other services to all caregivers, really. So there is legislative action happening. Public awareness, we need to increase the availability of services, and this is happening at local levels, at state levels, and at national levels. We have a series of recommendations in our report about how these services can be enhanced to really better support our nation's military caregivers.
And you're calling them hidden heroes. Are we aware of everyone? Should there be some sort of like a website where people can sign up and talk about what they're doing and what kind of help they need? Or how do we bring these hidden heroes out of the shadows and give them at least some recognition?
Yeah, that's a great point. Our study was commissioned by the Elizabeth Dole Foundation, and that's one thing that she's really trying to do and focused on, and her foundation is really focused on. They've identified at least one military caregiver in each state. They represent nearly one in every state. They're all currently in D.C. right now, kind of advocating their cause. They're called Dole Fellows, the Elizabeth Dole Foundation Fellows. And this is, again, to raise awareness. And the idea is that they'll go back into their communities and really help network and identify. One thing we noticed is that caregivers don't even label themselves necessarily as caregivers. So even though there may be resources online, when you're suddenly inserted into this position of providing this informal care, you might not realize that there's a whole network of individuals and a whole system that's there to support you. So increasing awareness to get people to step forward and realize, hey, there's help for me too, is a really important and critical step.
And so what is like the average age? I mean, these are still pretty young people who are coming out of these two conflicts, Iraq and Afghanistan. We have a lifetime of care that the nation is responsible for. We've got to figure out some long-term solutions, and I wonder if the system we have right now is sustainable.
That's a great question. We really worry about the system and whether it's sustainable, and we see three threats to the sustainability of the system. The first is that most of the programs supporting military caregivers are young. They're only 50% are less than 10 years old. We also know that they're, as I said earlier, they're not using interventions or approaches that have an evidence base, so we don't know if they're working and whether they're providing any value. And third and finally is that, unfortunately, we've seen indications in our country that as the wars wind down in Afghanistan now, that there's waning public interest and support for veterans and their families. And so these three factors combined really risk the sustainability of these programs and the resources to support military caregivers. And as you say, a lot of them are dealing with chronic conditions, and the need for caregiving services and support may stay constant or may increase over time.
And what kind of conditions are people dealing with? I know we had a lot of folks with traumatic brain injuries, and that can be probably a very difficult person to treat at home.
That's right. It's a lot of these conditions are, you know, 20% of these care recipients from post 9/11 have a traumatic brain injury, and so you're right. You know, there's associated challenges with each of these conditions that they're dealing with, and so it's really important to identify kind of the unique conditions that they have, and that's why we really need targeted approaches that are really catered towards caregivers. There's not going to be necessarily a one-size-fits-all strategy, but that they're really catering to the different skill levels, different demands placed upon caregivers, and the different conditions that they're treating. So we do have that information. We also know that traumatic brain injury sometimes can lead to long-term, you know, the conditions can deteriorate. We worry about early dementia or Alzheimer's for this group, perhaps, and so we really think that the demands placed on caregivers for this population in particular may increase over time.
And how do these people end up being the primary caregiver for this individual? Of course, if you're the spouse or the parents, but still, there's all that responsibility and those bonds are there. But is it they came home from the war, they were treated, and then they ended up in the house? And I mean, how did that happen?
Well, you know, when we talk to caregivers in the first phase of this study, so we had two phases, most of them said it happened essentially out of obligation. They were the spouses of the person and they came home with an injury, or they were parents to the person and they came home with an injury or an illness. So it happens not by choice. It happens essentially out of a sense of duty or obligation. You know, in our study, I was really struck by that 25% of caregivers who are friends and neighbors. And these are buddies, you know, who are caring for their friend. And I think that's, you know, they're volunteering, I think, in many cases to take on this responsibility. And I think that's a really kind of novel group of caregivers, especially.
Those are real heroes for sure. And what about financial help? Are they getting help?
There's three programs currently that provide financial assistance, long-term financial assistance, so stipends that help offset the costs of caregiving. So these are programs, one's run by the VA and one's run by the DOD, and both of those programs are specific to post 9/11 caregivers currently.
But there's so many other costs, like lost wages for the people who provide the caregiving, and just different adaptations to homes. Lots of opportunities there. I want to thank you for bringing this to light, Rajiv Ramcham. He is with the RAND Corporation. Thanks for joining us on The Source.
Thanks so much.
And this is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you so much for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.